Is Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Bale getting it on! It's scoring for Tottenham!
And still Ricky Villa. What a fantastic run! He scored! And he's away, Aaron Lennon! Crouch! Yes!
Welcome back to another edition of the all-new, all-dangerous Wheeler Dealer Radio. I'm your host, Skipjack. We are joined by two extraordinary co-hosts from Cartilage Free Captain tonight. We have my trusty sidekick, Ben Lennon's Eyebrow Daniels. Ben, say hello to the people.
Hey, everybody. Just hanging out with the crickets.
Just hanging out. Not feedback, crickets. And then we also have our resident lawyer-to-be and editor-in-exile, Brian A. Brian, how's it going?
It's going good. I'm, you know, here to bring a little bit of safety to this dangerous podcast.
It's I don't know if we need that, but we,
thank God for you, Brian.
I am the safety vest to Greg's, you know, 90 miles an hour in a construction zone.
Exactly.
You're the safety gilet.
Yes, I am the safety gilet.
All right, Brian, we don't need you on the podcast now. You can go. We don't need a Tim Sherwood. normally, we wouldn't need any safety, but after last week, the razor blades are out in the Tottenham community. Not that that takes a whole lot. But, yeah, we had what was looking to be a pretty good game turn into a super frustrating 2-2 draw against Sunderland this past Saturday. We had a Saturday game. How about that? So talk about squandered opportunities. Brian, that kind of sucked, huh?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't, like, a lot of fun or anything. And, you know, the result's obviously not what we want. But I'm really honestly not that bothered by it. You know, Sunderland are not horrible, and despite having lost to QPR.
Sunderland are horrible. Like, let's make that clear. Sunderland,
I mean, they're not going to get – I don't think they're going to get relegated.
I think
there are definitely three worse teams in Sunderland.
I think you're right, but these things
– they're in the mix.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, these things have a way of not – I mean, QPR is playing in the Premier League this year. If there is justice in this world, that would not be happening.
I mean, I don't know. I just think that, you know, everybody, you know, slips up. Everybody has, like, a banana skin game. And if one of our slip-ups is at Sunderland we only came away with a draw despite, you know, basically gifting them two goals, I'm okay with it, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's actually a fair assessment. They had two goals with a single shot on goal. And while that is cause for frustration and examination, we dominated that game. Aside from, I think, some late pressure that led to their second goal, we dominated that game otherwise. And I thought, honestly, I'm not sure if we looked better than we did against QPR, but I think you can make an argument we did. I thought we played a decent game. I thought the attack looked real dangerous. We should have scored more than we did. We should have had at least a penalty, maybe two. We hit the woodwork twice. You know, if Lamella's ball goes in, we're talking about how that godchild has come of age. Ben, what are your thoughts on this game?
Yeah, I mean, the result is shit. Like, there's no other way to put it. It was shit. We shouldn't have drawn. We deserved a win out of that game. But at this point in the season, you know, I am not ready to push the panic button like people seem to be. I think there's a lot of positives to take away. Our attack looked really good. I think Eriksen and Lamella, you know, I mean, they're obviously going to be so key to anything that we do this year. And they look on the same page, and they look like their relationship is really blossoming in a way that it maybe hadn't earlier in the year.
Yeah, I'm glad you pointed that out. I think even going back to the preseason, this is the best Eriksen has looked on the pitch. Certainly the best he's looked on the pitch with Lamella there at the same time. I think that's hugely encouraging.
Yeah, I mean, they're both creating a lot. You know, that we had some good chances. Lamella had a really good shot that cracked off the crossbar. Even Dembele almost scored. I mean, I think going forward, there's a lot of positives. You know, Chadley is looking like he can ably fill, I guess, what has now been dubbed the J. Rodriguez role at Spurs. You know, he looks eager to get in the box and take shots and make himself a target and an outlet for goal scoring in a way that we really, really need. Because, I mean, Eriksen and Lamella right now, you know, look happy to facilitate a lot of great opportunities. But, you know, Adebayor tends to drop deep. Soldado drifts around. Harry Kane drops deep. We don't really have a lot of guys who want to be in the box. And Chadli seems to be stepping up to the plate and taking on that role pretty effectively. So if Lamela and Eriksen can keep creating, and if they can figure out, you know, who's going to go forward while the other one dictates, I think we're in pretty good shape going forward. The real problem, though, is obviously at the back, and we still haven't really sorted that out. You know, we made a bunch of signings this summer. I think of our six signings, five of them were defenders, and then one of them was a defensive midfielder. So you'd think that some of our defensive problems from last year would be going away by now, but we still haven't really been able to integrate a lot of those guys. We're playing Dyer out of position. Fazio hasn't started.
So let's talk about the backline. I want to get back to the midfield later on because I don't want Moussa Dembele's day at the office to go without comment, but let's come back to him. Looking at the back line, so you said like five of our signings. So obviously, we can throw Yedlin out the window because he's not here yet.
Right.
Davies is
though he is very fast as we.
Oh, learned. I mean, he's look. I think if you guys haven't seen it, and I'm sure most Spurs fans have, he got caught out on a ball against in the U.S. Open Cup final. Basically our FA Cup final for you British listeners out there. And
it's less important than the FA Cup.
Well, I mean, that's in the structure of American
football. Well, how important is the FA Cup these days? Ask an Arsenal fan and I'll tell you one thing.
But it's the second old, isn't the US Open the second oldest cup in the world? I think behind the FA Cup. I think it's really old.
There's no way that's true.
It's 100 years old.
Maybe in the West, the Americas, I don't know.
I think it might be. Anyway, my point is, in that game, he got caught out on a ball, and he is a foot race where he was, like, way behind two other. I mean, it's almost as impressive as Ledley's tackle on Aaron Robin that we've all seen. It was really good. So you should all be really excited about Yedlin, because that guy, train him, he'll figure something out. But getting back to our back line, sorry, that was a whole detour.
Well, wait. Before we undetour, it is the third oldest Open Cup in the world.
Yep, I just saw that. And it's the oldest one in the U.S., so...
Well, obviously it would be. So, anyway, getting back to our back line. I think Fazio not starting is a little curious, but not super curious. He just joined. And honestly, I think part of what we did was we thought we could get away with a crummy back line against Sunderland, and hell, we almost did. I think Walker is kind of like what Kabul last year. Clearly, we thought he was going to be healthy sooner than he was, and now we're just, you know, I think we're riding Dyer's hot hand because he had a good game earlier in the year. I think I've not been super thrilled with him at right back, but he's 20-year-old out of position. I think he's doing an acceptable job, but, you know, it hasn't been great. I think we should seriously look at Naughton starting there.
I mean, Dyer has been involved, at least to some extent, in, like, four of our last five goals that we've conceded.
I think that makes it look worse than it is, but you're
yeah,
not
but
wrong.
I don't know. I mean, it is, and it's not great. I mean, he didn't track Sterling on the first goal. He caused the penalty on the second goal. He was out of position on the third goal against Liverpool.
But that third goal, that Moreno goal, like that's not, he
yeah,
was
no,
up
that's
field,
on,
like,
that's on Townsend, you know, I but mean, it's like, you
you're
know,
right.
Kyle Walker would have gotten back.
He's a liability on the right. And he's not bad necessarily, but he's a 20-year-old playing out of position who's doing probably an acceptable job, but it's not great.
Right. I mean, I'm not blaming Eric Dyer. I'm not saying, fuck Eric Dyer, this guy sucks. It's just we have Kyle Naughton, who is a right back.
Yes.
Maybe he should be the one playing because Dyer, for all his promise and potential, and I think his ceiling is huge, and I think he could be a very good player for us, you know, but it might be time to say, okay, let's see what Naughton can do in this position since Dyer's not looking super comfortable there.
Yeah, Rose is on the left, and we don't know why Davies isn't starting over him. I think Rose has not been – he's not awful. I think he's always going to be outmatched by bigger teams.
I don't even know. Besides Liverpool, I mean, I thought he was fine against Sunderland.
I think he's going to get caught out against bigger teams, and that's what worries me about Rose. But he was fine against Sunderland. And then – we didn't play Jan, and my guess would be, you know, so we had a back line of Rose and Dyer, which is what it is, and then we had Kabul and Vlad, which should be good enough to beat Sunderland. It turned out it wasn't. I would argue they're both kind of responsible for that second goal that ended up being off of Harry Kane. But clearly I think Fazio and Jan got sat, I think, because they're going to play together against Partizan. And he wanted to sort of bed them in together against not a Premier League side. I don't have a better explanation than that. Jan at least should have started. I can see Fazio maybe not being up to snuff tactically, but
well, but I mean, didn't Vertonghen play two matches anyway with Belgium?
I'm sure that's
one
part
qualifier
of it.
And one friendly.
I'm but sure I mean, that's part of it. But didn't Dembele play in those games too?
I don't know.
He's kind of a rotation option for Belgium at
that's
this point.
That's a good point. Yeah.
But I mean, Lamela played for Argentina. Eriksen, I'm sure, played for Denmark.
But
you
I
know,
mean, it's also
all of these guys
of, like when did they get back? Like that's why we didn't see Benteleb because Benteleb didn't get back until like Friday.
But we saw Adebayor, who was in Togo.
Yeah, which I thought was surprising that he actually played instead of us seeing Kane. But
I think the flip side of that is like if we're gonna so given Rian's minutes for Belgium, we're going to have to sit him in one of these two games. And if I'm him, I'd rather play him in whatever other game Fazio is going to play in. Like, get them on the same page in with real game minutes. So, if you know, you're not going to play Fazio until Partizan, you know, okay, I'm fine with that. Like, we should have beat Sunderland with that back line, even though it wasn't great. But Ben, what did you think?
I don't know. I mean, I don't see any – I mean, again, if we felt like a broken Kabul and, you know, insane Vlad, who – you know, they both have their strengths. They're not terrible defenders, obviously. I actually really like Vlad. But if we thought that was good enough, you know, and it was good enough to stick, you know, Eric Dier into the fire against West Ham at center back in the first game of the season, I don't see how starting Fazio on Saturday against Sunderland would have been any worse than those decisions.
Especially when you think about Sunderland aren't exactly a team that have a lot of pace up top, and you could have probably gotten away with a slower central defense if you played Fazio and Kabul together.
Yeah, it's not like Connor Wickham is a speed demon.
Yeah.
I don't know. My guess would be they want to make sure that it's Jan and Fazio playing together.
We'll see. I mean, we don't even know for sure if that's what we're going to see on Thursday.
Yeah, I mean, it better be, but let's leave that discussion for later. But yeah, we got screwed again by our back line. I mean, they fell asleep on the first goal. That never should have been conceded. Vlad or Kabul should have picked up that ball that ends up bouncing off Harry Kane's chest. And that ball just hits Kane. Like, he's got a split second to react, and he happened to be pointing his chest in the wrong direction. You know, I don't blame Kane, that goal on Kane. He's just in the wrong place at the wrong time. You know, it's dumb, it's stupid, and it shouldn't have been a goal, but it was, and that's what happens when you create, when you give teams corners,
it was a free kick, and it was a soft free kick, and that's another thing that's, you know, I hate to talk about the ref, but he was horrible. Like,
he was not giving Spurs anything.
You know, he missed penalties, and like every niggly foul, even the very end, it was like everybody on Sunderland could have had a yellow card. In that last 5 minutes, they were just chopping down Lamela or Eriksen every time they got the ball, and the ref gave one yellow card for it. Meanwhile, Spurs were on four. It just felt like every 50-50 call, you know, if Spurs maybe fouled somebody, Sunderland got the call. If Sunderland maybe fouled Spurs, no call. And it just felt like that was the story of the game, and it just really killed our ability to put together attacking momentum, and it kept giving them set-piece opportunities, which – if you followed Spurs for any amount of time, you know set pieces are a huge liability, no matter who's coaching or who's playing back there.
Especially without Eriksen. It's
yeah, that was one thing I wanted to talk about. Like, we seem to, or Pochettino anyway, seems to be really willing to haul Eriksen off early and replace him with either a Lennon or Townsend or before Holtby. And it kind of hurts us in these late game situations where you have a dead ball that needs to be delivered. And I mean, not that Lamela is bad or anything, but he doesn't quite have the same quality in set pieces that Eriksen does.
Well, I get this game makes less sense to me. Like, you look at Liverpool, we're down, we haven't conceded our third goal. I could see wanting to maybe inject some pace and just get more direct because what we've been doing hadn't been working. Let's throw some, let's, you know, pin him back a little bit. I see the logic in that. Maybe
well, here too, it was, you know, we were 2-1 up. We expected, you know, we took off.
We were knocking at the door at that point, I think that's safe to say.
Yeah, you know, I mean, we took off. Was it Erickson for Stambouli? Was that the sub that happened?
Yeah, and then
you know,
we
so we were kind of retreating, and then we brought on Lennon to kind of give us some pace on the counter. And those subs make sense. It's just don't take off Erickson. Like Erickson, you know, for all Lamela's been good, Erickson is the one guy on the team who you're like, okay, if we need a goal, like this is the guy who you want to have the ball, and to take him off in those situations is a bad decision. I mean, I don't know how else to put it more gently, but
I mean,
it's bad.
It's frustrating because if literally things don't go completely Sunderland's way, we're not talking about that substitution. I mean, it's sort of a, I don't know. I feel like it's not entirely fair. I mean, and we ended up having like what, 5 dead balls, like because Sunderland was just chopping the hell out of Lamela in particular. I mean.
But I mean, it also just raises the, you know, the issue of that we don't have any other really good, reliable set piece takers on the team. Like you look at a team like Chelsea or Manchester City or Arsenal, and they have a number of guys that can step up and take those free kicks from 25 yards
serve a ball.
But I mean, I don't want Walker taking those shots. Walker he scored one once or two twice. Like he, and then he just thinks
Walker
he can blast them
in. Walker scores pretty amazing. But my point is, if you want someone just to put some mustard on it, I mean, Walker's not a terrible choice.
But I mean, like even you know, we don't have Vertonghen wasn't in the team, and he can hit them. We didn't have you know, we don't have Gylfi anymore. You know, so who on the team other than Eriksen or Lamela can even take free kicks?
Yeah,
you're
nobody.
Right. You're right. It's not a. It's
I mean,
not
Kabul can just blast one.
Yeah, it's been since like 2007 since that worked.
Right.
That makes me sad.
Yeah, and you know what? You say like, well, if Sunderland hadn't scored, you know, we wouldn't be having this conversation. But the fact is that's always a possibility, especially
well, no,
with
no,
Spurs.
No, that's not what I mean. That's not what I mean because it's like I understand what you're saying, but it's not like Sunderland was creating cohesive attacks against us, even though they were, especially once we took Erickson off, creating pressure on us. But it's like, they scored in such a dumb way. Like, it's not like Pochettino took them off, you know, when they were putting shots on goal.
No, I mean, I understand your point, but I just think that you always, like, not that Lamela is a bad set piece taker or anything, but we really needed someone who could actually serve a decent ball into the box. And Lamela, I mean, to me, that part should be the easy one. Like he didn't hit the goal when he had the free kick much closer to the box. Like, okay, like whatever. There's no guarantee that Erickson would have done that either. But like to not even serve a decent ball into the box in some of those last ones it's embarrassing.
Yeah. Well, that last chance bounced off the back of Harry Kane's head instead of being in a dangerous area.
He's not. Yeah. Harry Kane did not have an auspicious day. But I think the problem with the substitution is I think we were running that game, and when we took Erickson off, and I didn't see this coming, because I think what he did was reasonable. You have two defensive midfielders, both of whom can play the ball. It's not like they're just going to lump stuff out of there. It's not like Scott Parker's back there. You got two defensive midfielders who can play the ball playing back. You've got Dembele in an advanced role, which is something he's played before. So he knows how to pressure guys. And I thought that was a decent – I thought that was like, okay, this makes sense if you're really trying to go for another one. But it really didn't go all that well. I mean, why do you think that just sort of – why do you think taking Erickson off just sort of seemed to pull the rug out from under us, Ben?
Well, Erickson holds the ball and takes it forward from midfield a lot better than either Stambouli or Dembele. You know, Dembele's going to dribble forward, and if he gets dispossessed, now he's out of position and they have a counterattack. Erickson doesn't seem to get dispossessed very often, and he moves the ball a lot quicker into more positive areas. And so that's the kind of guy – I mean, if I'm Pochettino and I want to bring on Stambouli and I want to keep on Dembele, I mean, take off Chadli first. Let Erickson go to the left and be an outlet over there because he's going to be much better at keeping possession.
I think we did that for a little bit, didn't we?
I think Erickson came off first and then Chadli came off for Lennon, okay. But maybe I'm mistaken.
Yeah, we did our research tonight, guys. We appreciate. I think
the one noticeable difference, anyway, when you switch Dembele and Chadli, or excuse me, Dembele and Erickson, is Dembele is still so ponderous on the ball, and you could see a couple times in the attack Dembele played really well. I don't want to take anything away from him, but you could see a couple times he held the ball just a beat too long or took an extra touch or two, when really what had been happening in previous games with Benteleb, or what would happen when Eriksen had been in, was they would just release the ball at the exact right time or release it early, and Dembele just holds it too long, and that makes us slow, and it makes the attack break down. And he's done that for us last year. He plays that way for Belgium. Like, that's just the way Dembele plays.
Well, yeah, it definitely has its uses, especially, you know, starting from deep. If you look, I mean, I noticed watching Match of the Day, every Spurs highlight, every chance we created, the ball started with Dembele carrying the ball into that final third and then letting the guys in front of him make creative shit happen. And he's wonderful at that. But you give him the ball outside the 18-yard box and he's a lot less effective. I mean, you remember that pass earlier on where Eriksen scoops the ball over the top to Adebayor, and Adebayor hit it right into the keeper, who was, you know, a yard away. It wasn't really Adebayor's fault. But, you know, Dembele's never going to do that. You know, he's never going to be the guy who puts the ball into a dangerous area for someone.
There's a point late in the match, I want to say around the 70th or 80th minute, where Dembele is leading like an odd man break, and it's him. He's coming through the middle. He's got Adebayor to his left and Lamella on his right, and Lamella is standing, waving his arms unmarked at the top of the 18, and Dembele just kind of dwells on the ball at the top of the D and takes an extra couple of touches and then passes it over to Lamella. And then by that time, the fullback's on top of him and they can't do anything with the ball.
I'm not going to blame Dembele too much because, you know, A, he's been trained to be a deep-lying midfielder for about 3 years now, and B, like, ADB broke him so badly.
Well, I think the thing is, it's not a criticism of Dembele, it's a criticism of Pochettino. It's,
yes,
these are Dembele's limitations, why would you put him in that role, knowing that that's what he's capable of?
I think my guess would be, you're putting him up there to Harry. I mean, you know, you're putting on Stambouli, which is clearly a defensive move, and my guess is you put Dembele up there with the idea that he's going to just Harry guys deep. And sort of get the ball, you know, sort of put them under pressure early, which is what I assumed he was doing. It didn't work, but that was my assumption as to what he was trying to do.
I think the thing, what it really boils down to is, if you're going to take off a creative player to go more defensive, right now Pochettino's go-to is to take off Eriksen instead of Lamella. And it's clear that Pochettino wants a team to run through Lamella. Lamella's his guy. And I think that's fine, you know, from a long-term perspective. Yeah. I think Lamella has
not
the talent to be that, but he's not there yet, and Eriksen clearly is.
But I think the other option is, and you touched on this earlier, is to leave both of them on and pull Chadli or whoever is playing on the opposite wing.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm just saying.
But then you have the trick of Chadli offers a physicality that we don't really have up front. I mean,
you're getting that. I assume you're getting that by either, you know, pushing Dembele or Benteleb or Paulinho or whoever it is further forward. So it's not like, I mean, you might lose a little bit of the goal scoring, but you're not trying to score a goal. Basically, at that point, you're just trying to harry and, you know, keep some sort of presence up there.
True. And you just reminded me we still have Paulinho, so now I'm sad.
Yeah, I mean, I guess for me the thing, though, about this is that Pochettino sees Lamella as the centerpiece of this team instead of Eriksen, who was the centerpiece of the team last season.
You know, I get what you're saying, but, like, we also said that this is the first time under Pochettino that, you know, Eriksen seems to get it, and you know, Lamella's looked far more lively both in season and in preseason than.
But I think a lot of that, and we've talked about this before, is that Eriksen is playing much more of an ancillary role to Lamella. You know, it is not Lamella gets the ball to Eriksen and Eriksen makes things happen. It's the other way around. So, of course, Lamella is going to be the guy who looks more dangerous. And I think you're right. This is the first time, really, that Eriksen looked like he and Lamella were on the same page. But I think if we take Lamella off and let the team run through Eriksen, we know what that looks like. We saw that.
Yeah, I'm fine. I agree with you there. I'm fine with seeing that happen. Listen to us, Pochettino. Listen to us, Mauricio. You should do what we say. So I think that's enough about this game, which was sad. And, you know, sort of I feel like the results kind of really sucks because I think it masks kind of a quietly impressive performance by Spurs.
Well, I just want to say one more thing real quick before we move on is I think that we can be more relaxed about this result because there are still, you know, four of our competitors for the top, you know, six or four that are still behind us in the table and that still and that haven't gotten very good results. I mean, you've got Everton finally picked up their first win. United finally got their first win this week.
United won the title against QPR this week.
I mean, it felt like it because they scored so much, but no, they're still a few points off. And you know, even Liverpool, I mean, they've played a much tougher schedule than us, obviously, but they have a couple losses on their record. And Arsenal...
They lost to Aston Villa, and, well, Man City is a given. But yeah, they lost to Villa this weekend, which is big, and Man City lost to Stoke the weekend before.
Yeah.
So Chelsea, everybody looks vulnerable right now.
Everyone dropped points last week, basically.
And yeah, Arsenal hasn't looked terribly impressive, and...
They got fucking shellacked by Dortmund today. I mean, obviously Dortmund's a very good side, but...
Yeah, so, I mean, you've got Chelsea that are running away with everything right now, and I think that's just going to be...
Chelsea will be in what United's role used to be, for us at least. It's like, we don't really care, and honestly, I just hope they beat the shit out of team.
I hope we
beat them, and I hope they beat the crap out of all the teams around us.
I think Chelsea could go unbeaten this year. I mean, it wouldn't surprise me.
Yeah, they'll banana skin against someone.
But I mean, there's no way that Aston Villa, Swansea, and Southampton, who are the other teams in the top four right now, can maintain this.
Yeah, especially not Aston Villa.
Yeah, I mean, there's just literally no way. And so, you know, of the big six teams or big seven or however many there are now, Spurs are in third, essentially. So, I mean,
it's know what? We got a new manager with a bunch of players who, if they're not new, they might as well be, given how last year went. They're still like, you know, we had a pretty good looking game. We had some dumb mistakes from 20-year-olds off a back line that's, you know, will look totally different in probably 2 months. It's not the end of the world. Like,
and especially, like, the big thing for me is, like, yeah, I mean, we have our problems and, you know, we're giving up goals we shouldn't, but we're playing well and we look fun. Like, there's a lot to enjoy about how this team is playing right now. And to be, you know, cynical and fuck Pochettino and whatever other pitchforks out kind of mentality you have, it's like, enjoy it. Like, it's good. Even if we draw every game for the rest of the season, if we play like this, it's going to be fun to watch.
This is the thing, too. The AVB ride or dyers were out on social media this weekend, which surprised me. And they made a quasi-valid point, which was obviously in service of a much more irritating point. But it was like, oh, this is what you guys wanted last year when you're grinding out boring 1-0 wins. Well... Yes, actually, this is what I would like. If we're gonna have results that are not super fun, I'd rather look like this and do what we did this weekend than have games like we were having at the beginning of last year. Because A, I don't think that was sustainable under AVB, and B, this is way more fun to watch. And honestly, I'm on board for this. It's early days. I think the progress is encouraging. And you know, if we were doing this in May, that's maybe a little more concerning than it is now. But, you know, Rodgers Liverpool did, like, had some stupid banana peels his first year there. If this year just turns into that, where we lay a really good foundation to really make a charge at top four next year, I'm okay with that. I think the team just needs to progress. We need to see Lamella getting sort of up to the level we all know he can. We need to see Eriksen really start running the show for this team. I mean, there's a lot to be feeling good about here, and we shouldn't lose sight of that. I think you're right about that, Brian. Now, speaking about keeping things in perspective, Spurs named a captain this week, which is obviously super important, and everyone lost their mind about it, so that was fun. It was Yunus Kabul, which, honestly, if you watch that game on Saturdays, and the way he was sort of interacting with the refs, I don't think it should be a huge surprise. As far as I could tell, and this is from my American perspective, so I might not be coming at this from the way Brits might, the captain exists to sort of liaise with the referees, and that's about his most important role. Obviously, you want a leader in the clubhouse because he's representing your team, but I think this makes sense. He's a long-tenured Spur. He seems to carry himself well, has respect to the squad. I don't really – the only huge problem with this is something I think, Ben, you would like to talk about.
I guess.
Your huge problem, we've talked about this amongst ourselves, but what is your worry with Kabul as captain?
Well, I think my worry is everybody's worry is that it means Kabul will play every game when he maybe shouldn't. You know, we have Vertonghen, who's obviously the best defender on this team. Like, I don't think anyone would dispute that. And then we have Fazio, who we bought presumably to partner with him. You know, Vlad is still an option. Dyer looks promising. Kabul looks like he still hasn't recovered from his injuries and may never. So if your captain is supposed to be the leader on the field and the guy who, you know, encourages the team on, you don't necessarily want it to be the weak link in your defense, which Kabul might be. And so I think a lot of us would rather see Fazio and Vertonghen start every game. And if Kabul's going to be the captain, then that's a little worrying because it might mean that Kabul's going to start every game.
I think the thing with this is that Pochettino has hedged his bets by naming Adebayor and Lloris the vice captains. And obviously this was going to be – he was going to name vice captains anyway. But you have in Lloris someone who is literally going to play every Premier League game that he's healthy for. And Adebayor, who apparently that's probably true for him too. So I'm not terribly bothered by Kabul being the club captain. I mean, he's the second longest serving player we have on the roster. I think only Aaron Lennon has been at the club longer.
But the question is he going to be the club captain or is he going to be the captain on the pitch every week?
I think the
official release says he's the club captain now. And I don't think that Pochettino is so married to the idea of him being on the pitch all the time that he would put him out there consistently if he was not good enough. And like you said, we bought Fazio presumably because he's an upgrade. We didn't buy him to be the third or fourth option.
We thought that about Ben Davies.
But I think – I mean, Ben Davies is 19. Like, Fazio is 28.
Fair enough.
So, like, my thing is I can't think of someone on the team that I would rather have be captain.
Hugo's the only guy I can think of.
I think
Vertonghen makes a good claim for it. I mean, I know, you know, hashtag.
But what about his body language?
Yeah, body language, shmoddy language.
But I think there's something to be said for, you know, Yunus is obviously someone he's been at the club for a long time. I mean, he first joined Spurs, what, in 2006, 2007, somewhere in there?
Yeah, and then
he left for a couple years to go to Portsmouth, and then came back. And I mean, he's obviously someone that's well respected in the dressing room. He's one of the older players in the squad. He's been a captain at other stages in his career.
He can physically intimidate referees.
Yeah, and you know what? He's a good leader. Like, I don't think of all of his faults, I don't call his leadership abilities into question. He's not like.
And then,
to me, quiet back there by any means.
To me, like, captaincy is really kind of more a ceremonial thing, especially the way football is now. Like, in theory, the captain should be the one that talks to the referee. But we've all watched football, and we know that everybody talks to the referee, and everybody bitches, and everybody moans. So it doesn't really matter who's wearing the armband. I think there's kind of a weird stigma with giving the goalkeepers armbands, which I think is probably why Lloris doesn't get it, like, by default.
I would assume this is maybe the one instance of football fans being sort of rational in a weird way, because, yeah, it's the same reason you don't give a striker the captain's armband in a lot of cases, because they're not in a position to sort of – they're not physically in a position to talk to the referee a lot, because, like, Lloris has to run out every time. You know, it's just not feasible if that's the function of the captain.
Yeah, and I mean, so if in terms of players that are playing consistently, and then, you know, you've got Lamela, Eriksen, Chadli, Kapu, Benteleb, Walker, Rose, maybe, Vertonghen, Fazio, Lloris, and then probably Adebayor. And of those guys, you would have gone, all right, you know what, the ones that should be captain are Lloris, Adebayor, and Kapu, probably.
I'm mostly shocked by Adebayor of all of these appointments. I mean, he has the same hashtag body language issues as Vertonghen. I mean, he's always kind of had that reputation for being a head case and a cancer and all these things. And I don't know how true that is. And he's obviously well-respected within the squad. And, you know, an experienced Premier League player.
I think it's with
it's a little weird.
With Adebayor, I think it's probably two things. One, I think he's probably better in the squad than we give him credit for. I think it's telling, this is say what you will, he's been in a lot of Spurs promotional and social media stuff this year, like a lot. Like, he was one of the kid advertisements, he was in a lot of the big kid advertisements. He shows up at, like, there's that selfie thing he did this week. There's been a ton of stuff like that, which I know that, you know, say what you will about that, but it probably shows that he's got a certain level of respect within the squad, or at least not respect, but gets along with the squad to a certain extent. And on the flip side of that, so I think he's probably vocal in the dressing room, and I think he probably gets along with everyone, which is actually kind of impressive considering what happened under ABB. But at the same time, I think he's probably needs to be coddled a little bit by the manager, because like you said, Ben, he's had these issues throughout his career, and you know, he pitches fits and he, you know, gets angry, usually when he feels like he's not valued. And, you know, this is probably Pochettino seeing, like, okay, look what he just did for Tim Sherwood earlier this year. You know, clearly there's production to be had here. You know, name a vice captain, show some faith in him. Like, it's that whole Harry Redknapp put his arm around his shoulder thing. Like,
well, I mean, my big worry, though, is, I mean, assuming we're saying, okay, Kabul is the symbolic captain. He's a leader. You know, he doesn't need to play, but he's, you know, he's the captain. And that makes sense. I mean, at Southampton, Kelvin Davis was the club captain. He was the third choice goalkeeper. And he'd just been there for a long time. And that makes sense. But now, when you're looking at the vice captains, presumably these are guys who are going to play every week, who, in the absence of that club captain, either Lloris or Adebayor will wear the armband. The thing that is concerning to me is, does that mean that Adebayor is his first choice striker and will start, you know, from now until the end of the season, when we have Soldado, who I still think is better than Adebayor, you know, despite his struggles at Spurs. You know, I kind of expected Pochettino to be there not only to rehabilitate Lamela and make the squad better, but also partially to rehabilitate Soldado. And so that's a little concerning if it means Soldado is going to continue to be marginalized.
Well, I don't.
And also Harry Kane, who has looked.
But I think Greg's. I think Greg's right in that.
Greg's always right. First of all,
obviously.
Well, that's
insane. You have to. Adebayor is someone that you have to show a little bit of deference to in order to make him feel valued.
So you think if Adebayor isn't playing but is the vice captain, he'll still feel okay?
Look,
and that's kind of the strategy?
Look,
I think it's better than just being like, all right, nope, no, you're not playing anymore. Go sit over there. I mean, I think it's better to like throw him a bone and then be like – because, I mean, let's be honest. If Kabul is the club captain and then Lloris is the guy who's probably going to be captain in the league most of the time, when is Adebayor realistically going to be captain? You know?
Right. Europa League games, hopefully.
I think Kabul is probably going to play in Europa League games, don't you think?
Yeah, that's true. So never. You're right. So maybe that's just a let's make Adebayor happy.
Right. And so in theory, Adebayor captains the team when Kabul was injured. Okay. Great. Like, you know, I don't think naming him vice captain just suddenly makes him an automatic start or makes it so that we're not going to ride whoever gets hot or that we're not going to develop or try to rehabilitate, you know, any of our other players. But I think by showing him a little bit of deferential treatment and by, you know, attempting to make him feel valued, I think it's probably a good thing.
Well, and let's look at this. So let's look at our striker rotation for a second to bounce off this conversation. We've got Adebayor, Soldado, and Kane. Now, whatever you think about Harry Kane, he's not going to be first choice this early in the year. You've got two guys with much better pedigrees than him who cost a lot more money than him. But if nothing else, he has not yet had the opportunity in terms of matches to sort of supplant them. So he's not going to be first choice at this point. So you've got Soldado and Adebayor, and Soldado's been hurt for 2 weeks. So we don't necessarily know what Pochettino's sort of thoughts on the striker position are so far. So, you know, Adebayor has been first choice by default. I think he's going to start him over Harry Kane. And honestly, I think any manager would. Adebayor's played in the Premier League for like 7 years now or something like that. Like, I mean, you know, he scored 15 goals in like 2 weeks last year. I mean, yes, you're going to start him over Harry Kane. But I think as the season progresses, I think you're going to see much more of a rotation than a, you know, if there's a first choice striker, I think it'll be by a slim margin.
And my God, that cannot happen soon enough because I am getting so tired of watching Adebayor play.
Well, it's, you know.
Me too.
Say what you want about.
It's so, no, it's, there's
he
literally.
He fits Sherwood's system, which didn't exist.
No, don't care. Literally don't care.
No, you're right, because he's not, I mean, Pochettino wants him to play in a certain way, and it's not drawing in the other attacking players like, you know, like he should be. And
I don't understand how he got to be a striker at this level, or not even at our level, but at clubs like Manchester City and Real Madrid and Arsenal with as bad of a first touch as he had.
It's like watching – it's like kicking a ball into a brick wall. It's so
literally – yes. It's like if you threw me out there and were like, here, I'm going to blast this at you and then now control it. And I'd just be like, oh, shit. Nope. Sorry.
If he could control a football, he'd be world class. I mean, it's you watch the positions he gets in, the runs he makes. He just can't control it. It just bounces off his feet.
I think the runs he makes are terrible. I think the positions he takes up are terrible.
I think in comparison to his first touch, they're less terrible.
That's obviously his big problem.
Like every time, like he'll bring the ball down, and or like someone will play him a pass, and not even a hard pass, like nothing at pace, just like something that he can easily control with his back to the defender, and his first touch takes the ball a yard and a half away from it, and then a midfielder just drops in and sweeps it up, and we're going, and I'm just like, what is happening? And then in the unlikely event that he does control his first touch, the second touch gets stuck under his feet, and he falls down. I'm just like, oh my God, how were you ever a 20 goal scorer?
Well, it's kind of funny because that awesome chance that him and Eriksen created last week, it was a really good chance, but it started with a ball bouncing off Adebayor's foot that he kind of turned into like he poked it. It was like, you know, as if he meant to do it. He was able to run on, drop it off to Eriksen and make a run past the defense. And then Eriksen just dropped it in his lap. The keeper just happened to come out and smother it. But it was kind of funny how that, for once, that worked out for him. But, oh, it's just like you wish. And, you know, it's one of those things, if he could do it, he would have learned it by now. But, you know, anyway. So that's our striker situation. That's fun. Caused a lot of, the captaincy as well, that caused a lot of drama this week. Speaking of things that caused a lot of drama this week, there's a lot of news surrounding our ownership. And the stadium. Let's start with the stadium and then move to ownership. So it turns out Archway Steel is playing games with Spurs or vice versa. Someone's playing games with someone. And now it's going to a court case and it's going to take a while. And now it looks like we might have to play a season in another stadium to get this thing done as quickly as possible. This kind of looks like it's going to get ugly before it gets better. Don't you think, Brian?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, coming from this perspective where I'm a pseudo lawyer, I guess, the whole eminent domain thing and the compulsory purchase order or whatever it is called in England, it's very interesting. And the fact that Archway Steel is trying to combat this, I mean, I understand the argument that they're making. They're essentially asserting that the purpose of building the stadium really isn't going to benefit the public sector at all, and so the compulsory purchase order is not therefore legal or constitutional or Magna Carta. I don't know what they use.
It's Magna Carta. That's what they call everything in England.
Yeah, so it's based on the Magna Carta, I think. So I mean, I understand the position that Archway Steel is taking. I certainly, legally speaking, I think it's a perfectly valid argument. I don't think they'll be successful with it. I don't like the position that they're taking because I'm almost positive Tottenham Hotspur have not been lowballing them the whole time. They may have lowballed them initially, but I have to believe that at some point Spurs were like, all right, fine.
You're right. You know, no.
It's been 7 years. It's like some point the cost of just saying, fuck you, go away, here's money, is cheaper than every season we have to delay for building a stadium.
And I mean, I believe that Levy is a shrewd negotiator, and I believe that Levy will pinch pennies. But I don't believe
that Levy... pinch pennies?
Yeah, I transposed those vowels. Pinch pennies. But I don't believe he'd just be so dense as to jeopardize the entire future of the club by just trying to save a few million pounds or whatever the amount is.
this kid, whatever we're offering them, has got to, at most, got to cost Rafael Vandervaart cost. Like, there's got to be a level at which, you know.
I mean, to me, they can't cost out. Like, it's a small steel manufacturing company. They make, like, I don't know, like, what do they make? Like railing
metal.
And sheet metal. And so it's not like they're, like,
no, you're right.
Manufacturing, like, steel girders. And it's not like it's an 1,000 employee operation. Like, this is a small family company. And, you know, I think the problem mainly is that they want to expand the space that they have, or that the space that Spurs are offering them is not in line with their vision for the future of their company.
I think they know they have Spurs over a barrel. They've sort of lucked into this. They probably didn't want to sell in the first place, and then they ended up in the situation where they're the last people holding out, and they know they've got leverage. And now the question is, like, this has got to be costing them a lot of money. So, you know, I think Arsenal are clearly funding this, that or an Against Modern Football group or something. I have no idea, but it's you're Ben's right. I can't imagine Spurs have not offered. At some, you know, they lowballed them the whole way, at which point maybe Archway's just like, up yours, we hate you because you insulted our pride. You know, Spurs had to have offered them go-away money, make this end money.
Yeah, I mean, you know, you look at a new stadium will bring in X amount of revenue every season above what our stadium does now, right? So for every season we delay, that's revenue lost. At some point, it's worth paying that difference to get the stadium built because we'll recoup that revenue once we build it.
And I mean, what, the first plans for the NDP, they came out in, what, I want to say 2006, 2007?
Yeah, it was 7 years ago.
Yeah, so I mean, and you know, I just think that Archway, they've made their stand on their principle, and if they actually are going to take it to court, that's fine. I don't think they're going to win. And even if they do, I still feel like Spurs will eventually be like, all right, fine. You know, what is it going to take? Like, there's no way that we're not going to figure out a way to get this stadium built. And honestly, if it comes to the point where we can't build it in North London, I think Levy will, or whoever's the owner at the time, will explore somewhere else.
Well, I think at this point they won't, because, like, there's so, I mean, if Archway steals it, they've already sunk a ton of money into this, but it's so.
But I mean, I guess I don't have an understanding of where Archway Steel is. Like, in my head, Archway Steel is, like, positioned, like, right in the center circle of the new stadium. Like, and I mean, I'm sure that's obviously not right. I'm sure that it's probably just, like, on some corner where there's, like, going to be a concourse or something. And maybe the answer is, screw them, we'll build around them or whatever. I don't know. But, like, I just
thought of this, and I don't know if I'm just talking out of my ass, but is it possible that all the talk of the Olympic Stadium was gamesmanship with Archway to say, okay, fine, you won't take this $5 million, $10 million offer, we'll go somewhere else, and we can do that to try and get them?
I think definitely, but and also, you know, in part because Archway, the owners claim to be Spurs fans, and I mean – even if you're not a Spurs fan and you don't care about football at all, in that community, Tottenham brings so many people through that area, to that area, employs so many people.
Who else is going to build a $100 million development in that area of town? I don't want to get too...
Who's going to build a Sainsbury's? I mean, come on.
Daniel Levy, that's who. I don't want to get too into it because we don't live in the area and I don't want to, like, make too many presumptions, but I can't imagine... Look at the situation we're in now. We're going to have to go play another season. We're going to play a season away from Tottenham Hotspur. So even if we aren't going to lose money on that, and I guarantee you we will, that's a huge headache for the club. And that's if we don't go play somewhere like MK Dons, which, you know, if I'm Levy, if I'm the social media manager that year, I'm just going to go kill myself because, like, you know, I mean, Dons have a semi, probably a pretty well-deserved reputation for being a pretty awful club. And, you know, I don't think people are totally out of line for being not happy about playing a season there. But
in fairness to Don's, nice stadium, similar size to White Hart Lane.
It's the best option Spurs are going to have. Unless Wembley's willing to just, like, rent out the lower bowl or something.
And then, I mean, Wembley has a problem where they're only allowed to host, like, X number of major events a year.
Because they don't want the turf to wear out, or the field to wear out. So
But, I mean, we only play so many home games. So if we just played 19 Premier League games a season there, that won't necessarily...
Yeah, but then where do you play your Europa League, your Carling Cup, your or Capital One Cup, your FA Cup? Like, what do you do with all those?
We'll crash out of those early.
But, you know, so we're in this bad situation of we're going to have to play with... We're probably going to have to go to Don's, which no one's going to be happy about.
I mean,
you
know, Ryan raised the option of Twickenham, which I think is interesting and would be – I mean, that would be – I think the atmosphere at Twickenham would be horrible. But I think it's a possibility, if nothing – because West Ham have, like, something like right of refusal for us to go to the Olympic Stadium or something like that, I read.
Well, someone's got to help them make up the difference of going to the championship, so.
Right.
But it sucks, and the situation's not good. And if you think – that Levy and company are lowballing these guys, I almost guarantee you think that because you have an agenda. Like, at this point, they must have offered what could constitute a reasonable offer for this.
Yeah, I mean, they're businessmen. Again, they know the dollars. They know how the money shakes down.
The pounds, Ben. God.
The pounds. The pounds sterling.
Or, you know, whatever Scotland might be using in the near future. Who knows?
Haggis.
Yeah, I'm sure that's how they'll be bargaining.
Yeah, I'll give you 5 haggis for your land.
The situation is not good. It's not going to make anyone happy, and it sucks. And, you know, we're going to have to all live with it for a year. And it's going to be take longer to get built, but it's probably going to get built eventually. So here's hoping that happens sooner rather than later. Here's hoping this thing gets resolved soon, but it looks like it won't. Moving on from the stadium, it looks like Americans are coming in to buy Tottenham Hotspur. We're all pretty excited about that, right, guys?
America!
America! Man, when they make all Spurs players wear cowboy hats and cowboy boots during all their matches, it's going to be amazing.
I would so much rather have a Russian owner than an American one.
Here's the thing. It doesn't matter where they're from. It doesn't matter if they're a sheik, if they're an oil baron, if they're an American investment firm. Although it's kind of weird that, like, each group is always fitting these models. We don't know. Like, I mean, it looks like these are some of the people who are involved in the LA Dodgers, which is a baseball team, which spends a ton of money. They're pretty good. I think they're going to make...
They've eclipsed the Yankees as the highest payroll in baseball.
Yeah, part of that's just because they had that weird deal with the Red Sox. And so they're the inheritors of a lot of poor financial decisions the Red Sox made. But the point is they're spending that money. So they have money to spend, but we don't know what kind of owners they're going to be. And that's the scary thing about that. It's not because they're American. It's not because they're plotting a hostile takeover. They could be great. They could be amazing. They could be Man City's owners. But
the issue for me is not that they're American. It's that they're investors. It's that, you know, they're not, excuse me, they're not a Roman Abramovich or a oil sheik who is buying a club because, you know, there's prestige and it makes them look good. They'll be buying it for investment purposes because they see it as a money making thing. So they're not going to.
Tan bought a team because it made him look good. That doesn't necessarily guarantee anything.
No, but it does in terms of how they're going to spend their money. You know, a team, an Abramovich is going to just throw cash out the window because fuck it, I have a bazillion dollars. I'm just here to have fun and have my own football team to glorify the name of Roman Abramovich. If we have an investment group taking over, it's less likely that they're going to have such a cavalier attitude towards spending.
They might want to make Spurs as successful as they can. And we don't
and
know.
That's the thing, you look at Joe Louis and Enoch and Levy, you know, they're obviously running the club as a business for business purposes. But what's come along with that has been increased performance on the pitch and a better team as a result of it, because you don't make any money by having a shitty team.
I mean,
you don't make as much money by having a shitty team.
Well, I mean, when I look at it, I mean, you look at Enoch, which Enoch is an investment firm too, essentially. But the difference to me is that Enoch was founded essentially to run football teams. I mean, there was a point where they owned shares of, I want to say, 4 or 5 different clubs. Mm-hmm. They had part of Rangers, they had Spurs, they had Basel. And I want to say there was a Greek team that they owned and maybe one other. So the entire purpose of Enoch was sport and football related. And then this Kane Hoy, who is headed apparently by a Tottenham Hotspur fan, but one whose net worth is somewhere around $300 million, or, you know, like, which means basically, I don't know, what's that?
10. Poverty.
Yeah, I mean, 10, 100 times less than Abramovich, certainly less than Joe Lewis has.
But it's probably, also the group
it's probably
the
rough equivalent of how much money Daniel Levy has. So, I mean,
but it's he's representing this whole group, and they run the Dodgers, so it's not like they don't run.
But
the
I mean, it's my understanding of it is anyway is that Kane Hoy is it's staffed and run by people who had been associated with that group, the Guggenheim family, who of course has the museums and the Dodgers and everything, and they are not necessarily funded by the Guggenheims, but they are.
Well, Guggenheim is a minority investor and is certainly lending their weight behind the project.
But a minority investor. Like,
right,
I mean,
but I mean, these guys have money. I mean,
no,
this
I'm,
is,
not,
the
I'm not saying
question
they don't
is
have,
that they have money.
But, I mean, I just, I mean, I'm like you, Ben. I question whether, you know, as an investment firm, is their goal, all right, get them into a new stadium and then flip them? Or is their goal turn them into the greatest club and you know that we can.
Yeah, but right. If their goal is get Spurs to be a regular Champions League team and then flip them, like fine, that works for everyone. Like I don't want to see assets
that,
get stripped.
It also doesn't make any sense. I mean, flipping Spurs, if that's Enoch's plan, that makes sense. If that's Kane Hoy's plan, it doesn't. If they're going to have to shell out $1 billion to get it, you know.
Yeah, unless
Enoch bought
Spurs
for like Enoch bought Spurs for less than it cost them to buy Roberto Soldado. You know, it was at its lowest value possible in like the modern parlance of football economics. And they have turned it into a club that challenges for the Champions League. There's not a lot further that this new investment group could take Spurs to make it a worthwhile investment for flipping it purposes.
And I think, to me, the one big thing that I would like to see is I'm curious as to whether Daniel Levy would stay on as chairman or president or however any new ownership would decide to do anything. I know that Levy has obviously an ownership stake in Enoch, but I think it would be great if Levy were to stay on as chairman of Spurs.
It would be, but we don't know because he's part of the ownership group, and I could see where a guy might come in and say, I want you to keep running the team, but, you know, the ownership thing really complicates it. We don't know how that complicates it. I just think it's funny because,
I mean, in theory, Kane Hoy could just buy a controlling share.
Yes,
like they could buy,
totally
yeah, they
right.
could buy Joe Lewis's shares in Enoch and then
not
own the club and run the club and let Levy do his thing.
But this is the problem is this is all theoretical and we don't know. And a lot of these people who talk about, you know, wanting Levy out one side of their mouth, because if they talk about they want to spend more money out of one side of their mouth and lament how things aren't like they used to be out of the other, well, you want Enoch and Levy gone so bad, well, saddle up, partner, because we don't know what we're going to get when we get new ownership. And, you know, we got an ownership now who's done all right. I don't mind us getting sold if it's to a good owner, but we have no idea how they're going to run this club.
And we could get John Henry, who's actually done a really good job with Liverpool.
Yeah.
We could get Randy Lerner, who's like, this is really fun. And then he's like, oh, this is not that fun.
Or Shad Khan, who, you know, saw Fulham relegated. Or, you know, someone like Bill Kenwright. I mean, there's all sorts of bad owners that you can get. I mean, you could wind up with a Russian oligarch like Monaco guy, who was like, let's spend money. And then he was like, oh, wait, this is totally illegal. Let's sell everybody. Or, you know,
or
I mean,
I'm not getting my tax benefits. Let's
yeah, exactly. So, you know, I mean, it's just interesting. I mean, there's plenty of people out there, I'm sure, like, you know, the Arsenal
there are
has
pros and Shahid Khans, is what you're telling me.
Exactly. Exactly. I'm not even going to make my other point now because let's just end on that joke.
All right. Well, we've got two games coming up this week. I will sum up the previews for Partizan and our game against the Baggies as such, and you guys can add what you think because I think the preview is the same. We should win, but it could be tricky. Any additional thoughts, guys? Brian?
Who do we want to see against Partizan?
I think we want to see Kane. I think we want to see Fazio and Jan Vertonghen if Vertonghen didn't play last week. Bentaleb would be nice. I don't know. Those are there's Fazio, Vertonghen, and
I'd want to see Davies, Vorm, Stambouli. I mean, we know Stambouli's there for sure. I don't know. I mean, that's pretty much what I want to see.
Is there anybody else that you're excited about?
Right, as long as we look cohesive, I just don't want us to like I think Kevin said in the preview, I don't want that like boring, we don't know how to play with each other for, or like 1-0 win or
draw. Yeah, I mean,
I want to see a cohesive performance.
Milos is there. I'd like to see some Milos, but I mean, that usually.
Ryan Mason?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Sub appearance for Ryan would be nice.
So, I mean, I think you've got to – I mean, Partizan away is – I mean, that's a tough game, I think. I think, first of all, traveling to Serbia is difficult. I think the atmosphere there is going to be crazy. And I think Partizan are – you know, they're a decent team. I mean, they're –
they have two players I've ever heard of.
Would you say they're well organized?
You would have to, right?
Because yeah, I mean, almost certainly. you know, I think – I don't know. I just – I think this is going to be a tough game. I think, you know – I think a point is totally an acceptable result. I mean, away in Serbia. Away in Serbia, come on.
Away to Serbia to some shit-ass suck team. Come on.
Come on.
Man, when you get murdered in your sleep by Serbian ultras, like, in the next week.
Yeah, that's probably going to happen, but that's not the point. The point is it's fucking hardest in Belgrade. Like, if they were in the Premier League, they'd be in a relegation battle. Like, we should fucking beat the shit out of them. I don't care if it's the second team. We should.
It's going to be a crazy environment. I mean, I honestly can't name anybody that plays for their team. I'm looking at the roster right now.
Sasha Ilić and then Branko Ilicic are the only two players I've ever heard of. And most of you are probably going, who the fuck are they?
And yeah, I'm looking at the roster. Exactly true. I don't recognize any of the names.
So, got do we have any
Serbian and a Slovenian national team defender that I've heard of?
Let's end this.
They suck.
Let's end this before we either cause or perpetrate a hate crime.
Look, they're not listening to this podcast, and if they are, they have weird priorities in life.
You don't know. You're
saying,
Stoke fans,
Ben, are you saying that football ultras have weird priorities in life? Is that what you're telling me?
I must be.
I mean, just think about the Hearts debacle of a few years ago. So you never know who could be listening.
There's some like guy in a kilt stalking Kevin around the streets of Washington. So Baggies, any additional thoughts on that? We should win. It could be tough, but hopefully not.
They're surprisingly bad.
They're not. They're unsurprisingly bad. West Brom are bad.
No, I just.
So
I
we're
mean,
looking at a close match, is what you're telling me.
I mean, what makes you think West Brom should be better than they are?
I mean, they should have a much better midfield than they do. I mean, Malumbu and what's the other guy's name?
Claudio Jakob.
Yeah, Jakob. They've been horrible. Yeah, but Jakob hasn't really played yet. But I mean, their midfield. I mean, and Jonas Olsen, who was linked with Spurs when Harry Redknapp was coaching. Jonas Olsen looks like he's 57, or he's playing that way anyway.
I think he did not play for Sweden in their qualifier. Like, that's how bad he has been.
I mean, you know, they brought in Samaras from Celtic, and everybody knows you should never buy anybody from Celtic. I think the only player that ever played well after Celtic was Wanyama, and he got hurt a lot last year. So, I mean, their best player is Berahino, and
he's just a poor man's Harry Kane. Yeah, so exactly. Why do you think they should be better?
But they should.
Wait, so he's a poor man's Harry Kane. Does that mean he keeps his mouth shut?
No, say that.
But I think they have a lot of serviceable players. Like, I look at their roster and I go, oh, okay, like, you know, Olsen, Malumbu, Jakob, Craig Dawson.
James Morrison doesn't even play anymore.
Sure he does.
No, he doesn't.
He's played for them.
Guys, we've already talked
year.
More about West Brom than we really should have. So I'm going to make an executive decision and move us on to questions.
Let's talk more about West Brom.
No, shut up, Ben. We're not talking about West Brom. Go smoke a cigarette. Talk about West Brom with your cigarette. All right. So,
cigarette, what do you think of West Brom?
Shut up, Ben. So let's move on to questions.
Ben, I don't know. I think they're kind of good.
Oh, my God. Oh my god! Well, you know,
you're killing me.
When the football ultras come after you this week, I'm not going to be. I'm not going to be that sad. I'll pour one out for you at your funeral.
All right. If any Serbian nationals and West Brom ultras want to team up and find me, I will tweet my address after the podcast.
I will pour some magic hat on your coffin so it eats through it and dissolves your body on contact. So moving on to questions, we have let's start off with an important one from Harris Nye. What was the Spurs equivalent of Benghazi?
Greg, that's a you question all day.
Man, that's tough. I'm gonna say when Enoch, aka the evil non-investment company, bought Spurs way back when. I think that's the Benghazi. We still don't have answers about it.
Yeah. I was gonna go with that time that Arsenal got promoted to the top division instead of us, like way back in the 1900s, early 1900s. Because I don't remember why.
But that's not necessarily our fault and our cover-up.
Yeah, that doesn't sound like a false flag operation, Brian.
Obviously, I don't understand Benghazi.
nobody does, but apparently it's equivalent to Ray Rice, according to Fox News.
I just thought it was a bad thing that happened because people were stupid.
Well, it was a cover-up or something.
Benghazi is a cover-up. Because we don't want to know just how bad it is. Because
Obama, well, see, that's why.
This is what happens when you don't follow politics. Or current events or anything.
So Ben, do you have a Benghazi?
Our Benghazi is obviously the Musacchio transfer. There was way more behind the scenes that we don't know about that we need to know about.
Ooh, what about the Moutinho transfer?
Oh, my God. That is a total false flag operation. Good pick.
Yes. Redeem myself.
One of us has to do a Benghazi acrostic for about routine.
But none of those start with M.
We can figure it out. Make it happen.
Watch the space.
We're at war. Pick a side. Okay. Ben, I want to get to a question that we actually mentioned on the last podcast many moons ago before the international break wreaked havoc on our lives. This is from I'm not going to say his name. What single plausible event would have the biggest impact on Spurs making the top four?
So I want to give credit to this guy's name because it's a great username. It's Kirakesh, but spelled like Churches, the band, which has a V in it. And if you're a cool hipster, which you must be if you're a Tottenham fan, you get it and you love it. So what single plausible event would have the biggest impact on Spurs making top four? Wilshere starting every game for Arsenal.
Really? Is that what you're going to go with?
Yeah. I really think Jack Wilshere, because Jack Wilshere starting means Mesut Ozil is playing as a left winger every time Jack Wilshere takes the pitch. And that not only means they have Jack Wilshere playing, but it also means potentially one of their best players is playing as bad as he could possibly play.
Well, that would be comforting. Brian, do you have a single event that could propel Spurs to the top four?
I'm going to say one of our strikers scoring 20 goals. I don't know if I have to pick one. Do I have to pick one?
Pick one.
If Adebayor scores 20 goals...
Ben will kill himself.
Because if Adebayor scores 20 goals, that means everybody else scores 30. But
Paulinho scores 20 goals...
Oh, my God. Right.
No, if Paulinho scores 20 goals, we're definitely winning the Europa League.
We're getting promoted to the Champions League and winning that. On merit, if Paulinho scores 20 goals. This year's Champions League, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
We would deserve it.
No, but if some Spurs player, preferably a striker, if Adebayor gets 20 goals, then that is the single thing that would have the biggest impact on us making top four.
I think it would be if Lamella pulls if he just goes up a level this year.
Like Eriksen was last year?
I'd say like Bale was the year we made the Champions League. If he just does that,
Bale played for like 5 weeks that year.
No, I think he means the year that we were in the Champions League.
Yes, that's what I meant. I'm sorry. He just takes a big step forward.
Greg started following Spurs last week, so forgive him.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. That's a good point. Yeah, you know, if Tony Parker and, you know, starts playing Eric Lamella.
Steve Nash is obviously the Spurs fan. Come on.
Yeah, if
Steve Nash buys the club, I think Champions League is a shoo-in.
If Steve Nash and Adele form a group with Jude Law to purchase Tottenham
and Phil Collins.
And Phil Collins, right. Then we can – yep.
And that guy who directed 12 Years a Slave.
If Salman Rushdie doesn't get murdered.
If Counselor Troy and Salman Rushdie form a group.
How much more esoteric can we make this?
I don't know. We got some time. Let's see. If David Bentley's hair bought Spurs, would it be a worse owner than any American? Okay. Moving on. Unfit for Purpose on Twitter, the clueless dictator himself asks, what is the airspeed of an unladen soldado?
The airspeed velocity. You butchered the Monty Python quote.
Whatever. I didn't butcher it in high school, so that's what really matters.
Are we really answering that question?
No,
or is it? I feel like there's another part to this question.
Yeah, no. Who is the dirtiest player you've ever seen play for Spurs?
It has to be Zecora, right? For me, anyway. I mean, my Spurs memory goes back to like 2004, so it has to be Didier Zecora.
Was he dirty? I mean, he dove.
Not while he was at Spurs, but he definitely kicked that guy in the balls in Spain.
Yeah, that definitely happened while he was at Sevilla.
That was amazing, by the way.
I mean, the guy deserved the kick in the balls, but like that was an extreme. I'm trying to think we've never really had any.
Michael Brown, he's a piece of shit. We also had Ben Thatcher. I don't know how much he played for us, but that guy's a piece of shit.
That. I mean,
he's the guy who went elbow first on somebody. Pedro Mendes, maybe, while he was playing for Man City.
Oh, while he's at Man City? Jeez. That was
while Thatcher was at Man City, before Man City had money.
Oh,
he was a piece of shit. Michael Brown's also kind of a piece of shit. I don't know.
Anthony Gardner wasn't dirty. He just
he was
sucked.
Just bad.
Same thing with Rasha. I mean, I can't think of anybody – like there's never been a Spurs player who was like getting consistently sent off, or at least in my memory. That doesn't mean that in the late 90s, early 2000s, there wasn't one.
Yeah, we all have very limited memories here. We're Americans. We don't know the history or care about the history of this club.
No, not even
– I got it. I know it. I nailed it. It's Jamie O'Hara.
How is it possibly Jamie?
He dated Daniel Lloyd. Yeah, he's dirty in the sense that he's married to Daniel Lloyd.
Dirtiest player to ever play for Spurs.
Yeah, that's pretty
cool. Yeah, I will give you that. I am upset with myself that I did not make that connection because I used to love Jamie O'Hara. Yeah, I thought he was wonderful.
Jamie O'Hara never took one touch when he could take six or seven.
He just didn't marry Daniel Lloyd. He married Jermaine Defoe's sloppy seconds, right?
Also, Aaron Lennon's
like
too. I want to
say. Daniel Lloyd fucked like everybody on Spurs.
Yeah, literally.
So
hashtag
#Gamergate. The dirtiest. Oh my god. The dirtiest player to ever play for Spurs was
O'Hara. I mean, in dirtiest in the normal sense, would maybe Woodgate? I feel like Woodgate got a lot of cards.
I don't know. Woodgate's a classy fellow.
Yeah, but is that just because he's English? Do we just feel that way because he's English?
No.
Guys, Alan Hutton.
Nah, I don't – I mean, he sucked, but I don't think he was ever like
– wasn't he kicking dudes when he was here, or did that only happen when he left?
I thought it was mostly
–
I'm probably just assuming he's Scottish. I'm probably just assuming he's Scottish, so he was like hitting people, but
– I mean, he wasn't like – I don't know. When I think of dirty, I always think of guys like Joey Barton or Lee Cattermole or those guys.
Would Mackay get going way back? I know Mackay was great and all that, but like, if you want to talk about physical hurting people, I mean, obviously we never watched him play, but would a guy like Mackay qualify for this sort of?
Yeah, I mean, he was a brutal player, but
I'm not sure.
It's not like a guy like a Shawn Cross who you're like, oh, yeah, this guy's just hunting to break people's legs. We haven't even had like a guy who's just like a someone who like likes to play head games with people and just like fuck with you. You know, we don't even have anybody like that.
I mean, Sandro could get cheap yellow cards a lot of the time, but
yeah, he might be the dirtiest player in recent seasons. But yeah, way to go, Spurs! You're
what about Jan Vertonghen? Like that game with
that fucking
Torres.
Dive.
Yeah, that game with Torres where they was just like.
Yeah, and the fucking pull the pants down of whoever.
Oh, that was great. That guy
Cornelius.
Cornelius.
Cornelius. I don't know what his name is.
No, Hellenius.
Hellenius. Whatever. He played for Cardiff, right?
Yeah. Well, he never played for Cardiff, but yes, he was on Cardiff.
Scott Parker. He got a lot of yellow cards.
I think
he got his face stepped on that one time.
Guys. Jamie O'Hara wins this
conversation. Yeah, we should have ended the conversation there. Jamie,
yeah, we just really revealed our ignorance.
Guys,
what's happened.
On September 7th, Danielle announced she had filed for divorce.
Oh, what?
I know. So
I think he has like a tattoo of her face on his forearm. I swear. I'm Googling this.
That is another reason why you do not.
Does he even play soccer anymore? Apparently. Does he play anywhere?
He used to be on Wolves. I don't know where he plays now.
Let's find out.
Shortly after not having been issued a squad number for the new season, O'Hara's contract was terminated with immediate effect by mutual consent. So
So we should sign him. He's a free agent.
Good call. Good call.
Call him up. Jamie O.
See, he really screwed himself by not going and joining the Irish national team. I mean, he could still be getting caps for Ireland even though he's a free agent. Like,
by the way, the picture on his Wikipedia page is him, Darren Bent, and Fraser Campbell.
The heady days of him playing for Spurs. God.
Man, that was a bleak era. Thanks, Wande.
Jesus Christ.
You all right?
I'm going to be fine. I'm just – that made me so sad. Final question. This is from Snowho56. For some reason, Walker is in Lamella-esque injury purgatory in the spring. Would you prefer to see Naughton, Dyer, or Yedlin getting significant time at right back? I'll start this out. As much as I think Yedlin was a smart buy because A, he's cheap, and B, he's a physical monster who can be taught. And I think he has some good instincts, although clearly he needs to learn a lot. He is not ready to be a Premier League right back. Certainly, I don't think a starting right back. I think Naughton, probably. I don't know how Dyer would take the position if we left him in it for that long, but I think Naughton has to be your option. If you don't go out and buy someone, if Walker just looks absolutely crocked, I think it's got to be Naughton.
I think it really depends on where you're at when, you know, the second half of the season or the period where you don't have Walker available is. Like, I mean, if you're talking about March, April, and May, and we are in contention for fourth, then I think you absolutely have to go with Naughton. But I think if you were the top four have essentially separated themselves and you're just kind of riding out the season looking at fifth and sixth, then I think you can take a few chances and play a guy like Yedlin.
I just think that might be my worry with Yedlin is throwing him in the deep end too soon and just like screw.
But that's the thing is it's not necessarily if the season's over for all intents and purposes.
Did you guys
and,
look
you know,
at the way our fan look? Go back, think of how Bentaleb played last year, which was slightly below average, and how our fan base
he
reacted.
He was good.
To him.
He was very good.
But my point is, like, our fan base like lost. I just don't. Spurs fans are the worst, and I don't want to see that happen to Yedlin. Like.
I mean, Yedlin is certainly more experienced than Eric Dyer.
Dyer's played at a higher level, though.
Dyer hasn't played in the World Cup.
But Dyer's played, like, was starting in Portugal last year. I think that's
not as a right back.
True. But, you know, Yedlin barely plays right back sometimes in America. I think Yedlin's got issues, and I just. You know.
I mean, if the season's over, then I think why not spend the next 4 months getting Yedlin up to speed so he's ready to run next year? I don't think that's a bad decision at all. You say for all the shit that Bentaleb got, but then Bentaleb went on to look good in the World Cup and then start the season for Spurs.
Fair enough.
The answer is really, though, Yunus Kabul, because he clearly wants to be a right back. I mean, every game, at least once, if not more, he goes on one of those weird runs down where a right back should be and tries to pretend he's a right back without fail every game. I think it's in his heart.
So what you're saying is Yunus Kabul and his unbeatable pace are what we need on our right wing.
Yeah.
Backing up whoever.
We need Vedran Chorluka. That's the answer.
Well, that makes me sad that he left. Oh, well. Hopefully, Walker, get better soon. I have a feeling that Walker is going to be back because I think that surgery was regular therapy's not working, so we'll just fix it. And obviously, you know, there will probably be a lot of people who just say, why didn't we just get him surgery in the first place? And the answer is you never cut someone open if you don't have to. So getting any type of surgery is like being in a minor car accident. You really don't want to do that if you can avoid it. So
thanks, Dr. Oz.
Well, yeah.
There's one more question we pulled out that you forgot. Kabul's hair game.
Okay, yes. So this is a good final answer. Obviously, Tottenham hair club for men. Hair is very important to this team. I maintain Ben Davies was a remarkable addition just for his hair. Shiro Kabucha wants to ask, Kabul's hair game is currently not up to a captain level of quality. I would agree with this. It is fine hair, but if you're going to be the captain of Tottenham hair club for men, I think it needs to be better. What hairstyle should Yunus go with to really set the tone for this club? Brian, lead us off.
Well, I think you got to go back to probably the greatest captain in recent memory and Ledley King. And Ledley just rocked the bald head. And I think that's what Yunus has to go with.
Disappointing answer.
Shave it all off.
Ben, disappointing answer. We're done with your disappointment, Brian. Ben, what's your answer?
I don't know what hair Kabul has left on his head to grow to warrant a hairstyle. You know, like,
I mean, do you guys remember the stupid haircuts he had when he joined the club? He looked like he was a member of the Pirates of the Caribbean. Like, it's ridiculous.
Yeah,
he didn't have stupid dreadlocks.
Yeah,
it was ridiculous. Just go bald.
Okay, I don't know
what his hair capacity is.
This is not the answer. So we
plus his hairline is literally, it's like at the back of his head now.
Okay.
Like it's receded to the point where he has a forehead from the ears forward.
Yunus Kabul is not just a Premier League player. He's been a Premier League player for years, and he's the captain of one of the biggest teams in England. He has resources at his disposal, as Wayne Rooney has demonstrated. Now, he doesn't need his, like, boy band, like, Jack Sparrow wannabe bullshit that he was rocking a few years ago. He needs to bring something class to the club that also makes him stand out. So what he needs is a big old pompadour. He needs, like, Elvis Presley.
I'm, like 99% sure Yunus Kabul cannot grow that.
Doesn't matter. Does not matter. Science will make it happen. We can rebuild his hairline. We can make it stronger. We can give him the kind of pompadour that Tottenham Hotspur deserves. That's what we need to do.
I think best he can grow like a cool Jerry curl.
No, unacceptable.
I find all this ridiculous. And this is very.
This is where you draw the line.
Yeah, this is. You know what? The danger on this podcast has gone far enough when you suggest this man getting a surgery to so that he can grow a Jerry curl at best.
No,
you're correct.
I don't think he needs surgery. I think that's what he can actually rock.
A glorious, glorious pompadour.
No, I disagree. I think that I, as the safety expert for the show, I have to step in and say, just shave your head. It's much easier, and you'll look classy. No one will ever question your hair.
Man, he has gross hair. I'm looking at pictures from the past.
You have gross hair.
It's literally horrible. It's the worst hair.
He has horrible hair. Like, there is no saving grace to this.
That's why
I'm looking at old pictures, and it is a monstrosity.
He needs to use modern science to give him the glorious, shining pompadour.
Stick with bald, Yunus. That is the best you can manage.
Unbelievable. You're all ashamed. At least it's not Lewis Holtby and his dyed Hitler Youth haircut.
Greg, click on the link that Brian just sent in the chat. He has this lank He doesn't have cool guy hair. He has like this nasty weeds growing out of the back of his head. It's horrible.
And with, cool. and with his face shape, it just like he has this very square head. And then his hair, it just doesn't do anything. It just like sticks out in all directions. He looks so stupid.
Yeah, it's not doing him any favors. Eunice Kabul bald is the way to go.
Thank you.
Stay bald, Eunice. Stay bald, stay proud.
Okay, you guys, let's calm down. Let's not say anything we're going to regret. He needs to go find some scientists who can, like, you know, spray his head with some stem cells and, like, grow out some hair that he can have luxurious locks with. Get some dreadlocks, get a pompadour, get something going.
Yeah, pompadour is not happening.
It's happening. It's happening. I mean, not this, like, fucking receding hairline John Mayer bullshit that you're showing me right here. I'm telling you. Use modern science. Use it.
Bald is beautiful. I mean, you look at Zidane, who before he went like full shaved head bald, he was rocking a Costanza.
Oh, Zidane's old haircuts are horrible.
And when he went bald, he looked like a fucking badass.
So, all right. No,
looking at old pictures of Kabul with hair, bald is the best case scenario for this guy.
He needs to grow his hair out and have it shaped to look like Chirpy. And
get
he shouldn't
out.
Play a game until it looks like that.
All so right. Thanks for joining Wheel of Dealer Radio.
Bye. All right, Ben, shut up. For Ben Daniels and Brian Ashlock, I am the correct hair evaluator for Tottenham Hotspur Hair Club for Men. I am Skip Jack. Thank you for joining us. We will talk to you next week. Come on, you Spurs.